This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the best bits we've been up to on a very busy Tuesday, November the 10th. And it has been this morning all about the vaccine. That news overnight from Pfizer that its tests were coming up positive, that not in a bad way, by the way, good positive, that they were seeing 90% efficacy in stage three trials. We have been finding out what it means for tourism. We've been finding out what it means for oil. We've been finding out what it means for markets. We've been getting the opinion of economists and doctors as well. Plus, we've been looking at, speaking of tests, what's been going on Virgin Hyperloop, speaking firsthand to one of the men in the first trial of Hyperloop in the Nevada desert. Plus, having a look at the latest in US politics and what's going on in the UK as well, Boris and Biden. And Serena has been in with all of your latest COVID updates.
Ask Serena.
With Frago Man, dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide.
And before we dig into the big story of the day, that news coming out from Pfizer about the results of their stage three trials, Serena Kelly is here to remind us why we need a vaccine in the first place.
So this time last week, we were looking at new cases, 1,234. They announced just yesterday 1,146 new cases of COVID-19 in the Emirates. That's after more than 85,600 tests were conducted. So out of the 143,289 reported cases in the country, we always break down the figure for you. That includes 138,959 recoveries. That's after 668 people recovered yesterday, 683 the day before that, one fatality yesterday. So we're at 515 deaths so far in the country. And active cases, as in people that are still recovering and being treated for COVID-19 in the country, that stands at 3,815.
Right. And we've got some mask exemptions going on.
Yeah, it's for Dubai. So Dubai residents, you can now apply for a permit where you don't have to wear a face mask, but it has to be for a medical reason. So it's been launched by the Dubai Health Authority. They're working with Dubai Police. It's a website, dxbpermit.gov.ae. You need your Emirates ID and a medical report confirming the condition or conditions that you have, because there is a committee. They'll evaluate your application and then it's processed within 5 days. That's how long it takes. But they've listed a variety of conditions. It's mainly, you should be considering this if you've got an allergy that's being aggravated by wearing the mask, or there's parts of the mask that are aggravating certain parts, you know, causing an allergic dermatitis reaction perhaps. Anyone who suffers from acute or chronic sinusitis or uncontrolled asthma should definitely apply for this permit as well. And obviously people of determination under certain categories should be applying for this as well. But even with the exemption, authorities are saying it is still encouraged to wear a face mask whenever possible, because it's not only just for your safety, but for those around you as well.
Right. Telemedicine. Tell me what is happening.
So COVID-19, we've seen many things having to revert to online due to safety precautionary measures. So taking that into consideration, the Ministry of Health and Prevention is launching a new international telemedicine service. So this is going to allow patients to connect with consultants abroad via a video platform. So it's going to be available later this month on offer in 16 Mohab hospitals. So it ties in with Visiting Consultants Program. It's basically where that helps doctors deliver remote second opinion consultations in critical conditions. But it's just opening up whole new terms of, you know, being able to treat patients, getting second opinions, diagnoses. And so you can all do it from, you know, you're here in Dubai and you don't necessarily have to go to another country to get something, you know, either a second opinion or verified. It can all be done online.
Right. And we've got a word of the year. This Collins Dictionary does this every year, don't they?
That's correct, yes.
Tell me what it is. It's got to be COVID related.
It is. Lockdown has been named word of the year by Collins Dictionary. So the top 10 list, very much dominated by terms relating to the coronavirus pandemic. Six of the 10 words, actually. You've got furlough, key worker, self-isolate and social distancing. So Collins registered more than 250,000 usages of the word lockdown this year.
I can see that English scholar Tom Urquhart is raising his eyebrows. Are you really going to argue that some of those are phrases, not words, Tom?
Well, I could get pedantic on that, but let's not argue about syntax or anything like that. I'm just surprised that things like, or maybe you haven't finished the list yet. I'm surprised things like a word that we have bandied around a lot.
Pivot.
Pivot.
Uh-huh.
Unprecedented.
Unprecedented. Zoom. The noun or the verb.
TikToker is on there. TikToker.
Delicious. Minty ones. Love the orange minty ones. They're lovely.
TikToker's on there. Megxit was also made it because of Harry and Meghan's move to the US. And BLM, the abbreviation for Black Lives Matter. But yeah, lockdown was named the word of the year. He's still raising his eyebrows.
Not convinced. I just think there's so many others. The pivot, surely.
They're saying the reason why it's the word of the year is because more than 250,000 usages of the word were made this year alone.
Who's counting?
Compared to 4,000 in 2019. I suppose it's an online thing. I'm just speculating now that you put, it's almost like a hashtag. You're looking out for the word lockdown and it comes up saying it's appeared so many times. You know, ask Alexa or something.
Toilet paper? Is that on the list or not?
No, I would have to, it was mainly majority, 6 out of the 10 were...
Pasta?
6 out of the 10 were COVID related.
Right, so the big news, Serena Kelly, that we have been talking about this morning, Pfizer.
Yes, so pharmaceutical giant Pfizer says early data suggests its potential vaccine is more than 90% effective in preventing COVID-19. So more than 43,000 people have been taking part in the phase 3 trials of the jab. Pfizer's developing the potential vaccine with BioNTech. The companies have said no serious safety concerns have been found so far. So now they're going to seek US authorization this month for emergency use of the vaccine. They want it for people aged 16 to 85. Now, to do that, it will need 2 months of follow-up safety data from about half the study's participants. So that's to assure no side effects crop up. Now, that's expected to be available later this month in November. So if granted, the companies estimate they can roll out up to 50 million doses this year, enough to protect 25 million people, and then produce up to 1.3 billion doses in 2021.
Let's just quickly hear from the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla.
It is a great day for science. It is a great day for humanity when you realize that your vaccine has a 90% effectiveness. That's overwhelming. You understand that the hopes of billions of people and millions and businesses and hundreds of governments that were felt on our shoulders, now we can credibly tell them, I think we can see light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, we spoke to Dr. Whale, didn't we, Tom? And he was bullish.
Positive word here, wasn't it? You know, we asked how positive should we be. He said very positive. It was great to hear a medical professional, somebody who works in this field and has done for many, many years, giving us that resounding thumbs up. I think that'll come as a fillip to many out there. Look, you know me, guys. I'm glass half empty kind of guy, despite what other people might say. don't believe everything you hear out there. But I temper all of these with the hang on, we've been down this road. We've had reports and got excited about them. However, when you look at the reaction to this one, this is a different curry.
Well, we asked listeners this morning, Twitter poll on Dubai Eye, is vaccine a game changer for business in the UAE? Simple yes or no question. 74% say yes, it is. 26% say no, it's not. But the majority, quite a significant majority, think it is a game changer.
Mm. Well, we've got our first event coming up, don't we, at the end of this month, which is going to be a no vaccine, no entry event. It's an MMA fight event. We've been speaking to event organisers about it this morning. Not the event organisers of the MMA, but the head of an events organisation and industry body here in the UAE. To say, you know, is this the future? If Richard can wave an app around, show us, Richard, your little... Have you got your star?
No, I haven't, because I need to get another negative PCR test. So, yeah, if you... Al Hossan app's not down, you're not coming in.
Ex- Exactly. Is this the way that it's going to go? Are you not going to get on a flight? Are your kids not going to get into school? Are you not going to be able to, I don't know, walk into an art gallery, whatever it happens to be, if you can't show that you've got a vaccine?
There does seem to be momentum building for some kind of health passport, whether it's testing or vaccinations. There will also be an awful lot of resistance to it. In the United States, only 51% of people say they will probably or definitely get a vaccine when it's available, which means 49% probably won't. There will be a lot of resistance to it as well, and I understand that.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
And this morning, it seems there is just one story.
Everybody needs shots, 'cause that's how we make diseases stop. Everybody needs shots, it'll be okay.
But will it? That is the question this morning. Pfizer and BioNTech, two drug companies that started working together in March, tying up, even though they are rivals, saying that their stage three tests show that the vaccine has more than a 90% efficacy rate. So far, the hopes have been for 50, 60, 70% in order to get over the line and to get approvals. 90% is higher than many were hoping for. It is a trial. It doesn't have the sign-off yet from the FDA, but it will be next month going through the FDA emergency use authorization. That's a special channel for things like this. Tom, what are you thinking?
Great news. I mean, who's not going to take away from that good news? I would just temper the news, that's all. We've had good news when it regards to vaccine trials already during this time. This is by far and away the best news we've had with regards to vaccines in terms of in terms of the headline news. But as you say, and it's not for me to say because I ain't got a scientific bone in my body. But when you get here, you know, when you hear the professionals, when they hear the scientists saying, great news, show us the numbers. Great news. OK, let's talk about it in 2 weeks when we've seen the symptoms trials. Yeah. Great news. Let's do it. You know, there is more to this. It's not a silver bullet that's going to cure all overnight. It's going to take a while anyway, even if we are 90% down the road. There's a lot of warnings coming out this morning saying people just hold on. You know, the last thing people want to see is a backlash because people think, oh, right, we've got this silver bullet. We've got this silver lining. We're good. Let's go crazy. And then, of course, we have another spike.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are still a lot of questions in here, as you say. It's not known how long the vaccine would be effective for.
Yeah.
It's a two-shot vaccine, which means that they need to get the same person twice, about 3 weeks apart. That brings its own logistical issues. It brings its own supply chain issues. There's a question of how much can be produced and who would get it first. There are deals, let me have a look at this, with supply agreements with the UK, Canada, Japan and Europe, the European Union. But obviously the world is a lot bigger than that. They think they'd be able to make around 50 million doses this year and about 2.5 times that in 2021. But again, who gets it, how they get it, when they get it, lots of questions. Whether or not it would work for against severer cases as well as some questions that some are asking about whether those who are vaccinated could still effectively act as carriers, because we don't know that as well about the virus.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting to see. I know that you highlighted, you know, the winners from this one a little earlier on. Stocks soaring for Pfizer, for BioNTech, the two that were mentioned there. But it doesn't stop there as well. Johnson & Johnson rallied last night. Live Nation retailers like
Costco,
Target,
Best Buy. Are you telling me I'm going to Pearl Jam in July?
Live Nation was up 20% last night. AMC, the movie theatre, they skyrocketed by 6%. So a lot of people out there seeing the benefits. But it's not all good news. You know, the cruise carnivals, things we talked about there. There's some notable losers last night as well. Video conferencing giant Zoom plunging by nearly 15% overnight, as did the interactive shares on Peloton, Amazon, Netflix, Roku, Stack, Teladoc, and Clorox as well, also significant dives overnight. So the yings and the yangs of a vaccine.
Absolutely. And let's take a bigger look, actually, at what a potential vaccine, something that's able to be rolled out in the millions of shots, could mean for all aspects of the economy. Let's start, actually, exactly there. Shadi Shaha Al-Borno is Senior Director of Group Research at Emirates NBD. We asked him this morning, vaccine excitement, Shadi, is it justified? Would a vaccine really kickstart the economy?
Well, to a good extent, a vaccine that is as effective as the one that Pfizer announced positive results on yesterday will mark a significant inflection point towards normalizing the world economy. You still have questions remaining on how effective the vaccine is for vulnerable groups and how long it will provide immunity, but markets are taking the news with stride. The S&P and Dow hit record highs. Airlines, hotels and airplane makers, three industries that have been ravaged by the pandemic, were among yesterday's biggest winners.
There you go, Shadi Shaha Al-Borno, Emirates NBD. We dug deeper into the markets this morning as well, speaking to Monty Saffordine, market analyst at IG, saying, OK, Monty, how much of a game changer is this news for the stock market?
Quite significant. I mean, we saw the initial cheer. You usually get that whenever some significant news comes out, you know, pushes markets higher and, you know, market makers get out and everyone starts to try and reposition a bit of, you know, these hectic moves, kind of like what we saw similar to last week. But in this case, we're seeing some of those moves a little bit being undone, but no denying that from a fundamental standpoint, you know, you put aside all the initial market reactions and all that kind of stuff, no denying that it's something for investors to cheer about a bit, especially because on the coronavirus front, it's been a bit of doom and gloom. I mean, we'd hear to all these companies getting into the vaccine race, you know, making deals and all that, but at the end of the day, we haven't really, really gotten this sort of result, which at this stage, you know, if expectations were that a 50 to 60% effective was considered acceptable, when you get 90% effective, and yes, phase three trials still ongoing, but when you get a 90% effective rate, you know, that's definitely considered positive, especially in the current environment.
There you go. That is one excited man. Right. Matt Stanley is a senior broker at Star Fuels.
Dictionary definition of excited man.
We asked him about what it means for the oil market.
Great day yesterday for the oil markets. Up 10% we were one stage. We didn't close up that high, but not far from it. Sort of a 1-2-3 yesterday. Obviously, there was the Biden factor, you know, the certainty there that was welcomed by the Wall Street and investors globally. Then we had OPEC talking, the Saudi minister talking to ADIPEC yesterday morning regarding the deferment of 2 million barrels of production coming into the market Q1. And then obviously the news in the afternoon, which really set the ball rolling for an extraordinary pop on Brent, was the news about the vaccine. And that's really what the rhetoric is about. You know, we're in a market that's still oversupplied and demand. Will it make an immediate return with the vaccine? No, but it certainly means that the worst is behind us.
There you go. The worst is behind us. I would take that. Tourism, of course, is one of the biggies for us here in Dubai. Massive part of the economy. And as Shadi Shaha Al-Borno said just a few minutes ago, tourism stocks, you know, airlines, travel companies, hotel companies are amongst those that have been the hardest hit by the pandemic. Geet Bala is co-founder and group CEO of the tour agency Holiday Me, based here in Dubai. We've asked Geet, what does it mean for your industry?
The travel industry has been pinning hopes on an early vaccine for quite some time now. And the fact that there is a vaccine which is now closer, it really helps the travel industry. I think we saw a big surge in travel stocks globally yesterday, whether it was cruise stocks or just online travel agencies or any other companies related to travel. They probably had their best day yesterday. And that says a lot about what this means for the travel industry. I mean, we know for sure it is still going to take some time. And this is by no means a magic panacea that's kind of come about. But it will definitely ensure that 2021 is going to be better than 2020. And, you know, that itself means a lot for the travel industry.
Of course, one of the other big industries here is the event industry, tied to the travel industry, of course, because it gets people coming in. Paul Berger is the president of the International Live Events Association, also the CEO of the Arena Group for the Middle East and Africa. We said to him, potential vaccine, how much of a game changer?
It's fantastic news overnight. And, you know, we're obviously all delighted that a company as reputable as Pfizer has introduced this, and it's going to have a big impact on our industry. But I think, you know, what the past few months has proven is that human nature will always prevail here. I think, people would still rather exist together than alone. And, you know, we talk about the new normal for events, but I think basically what people want is to get back to what events were all about, to be able to go to a concert, to a conference, even go and watch a football match. You know, this is what we want to try and get back to as quickly as possible.
With no disrespect to any of our experts, because it's great to hear what it means for all of these industries that are so vital to the Dubai economy. They're all excited. They can see a light at the end of the tunnel. They can see a sunrise on the horizon. Other metaphors are available, usually from Boris.
Who we'll hear from in about 10 minutes' time.
Who we're going to hear from. He's gone a bit metaphor-tastic on all of this. But what we actually wanted to hear this morning was the medical opinion. Didn't we? It's all very well for people to say, look, this is fantastic news. This is going to help get planes back in the air. This is going to help get bottoms on seats, whatever it happens to be. Great. Cars on the road in the case of oil. But from a medical point of view, given that these are still trials, they're not peer reviewed yet, there's still a lot of questions. How excited should we really be getting? And we've turned to a man who, if you've been listening to us through the pandemic, you will have heard from before, Dr. Wael Farouk Elamine, who is an infection control doctor at King's College Hospital in Dubai. And we said to him, okay, how excited should we be right now?
Most of us are smiling, waking up this morning, having heard the news yesterday. The many reasons to smile. A, it's a new technology. So the vaccine itself is something that we haven't used before, using RNA, so a bit of the genetic code of the virus, to use it to teach and educate our immune system to produce the an accurate set of antibodies with minimal side effects and a continuous a protective outcome. It's certainly something to be very happy about.
And Dr. Wael was very measured, wasn't he, Tom? He pointed out a lot of questions that still remain and a lot of issues that could be there with things like the supply chain.
Yeah, and that, I suppose, is going to be one of the major concerns. As he was talking about there, you know, a lot of positivity. The one thing will be supply chain because of the need to keep it at below zero or minus 80 degrees storage or whatever. Well, all good and well, you know, in Alaska, but try and find that in Angola or any other part of the world for that matter. So it'd be interesting to see whether that is going to fuel investment and what stocks are going to do for cryo firms.
Ice.
And, well, yeah, ice for refrigeration companies and things like that. Because if that is going to be the game changer, then obviously that's going to be part of the delivery.
Yeah, absolutely. And he also said, look, we're, you know, in terms of having it globally rolled out, there is some talk of not just having the facilities in the Western world produce this vaccine, but also in other populous countries. He mentioned India as one that could be producing its own, not version of the vaccine, but basically become a production hub for it as well. 6 to 12 months, he said, once it gets the go ahead, could be a potential rollout frame.
Yeah, which is we take that, wouldn't we, at the moment? I mean, I know a lot of people are talking about by the end of the year and by Christmas, etc. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. If we're talking on sort of larger scales and rollouts after permissions, etc., 6 months would be an absolute game changer for anybody. So bring it.
If we can all be, by the time 1st of September is kind of, you know, the new school year starts, but here in the Gulf, it fires the starting gun for what is the most important part of business here in the Gulf, September through to December in many ways, tourism, business, conferences and so much more. If we've got something pretty widespread by then I think we'd probably all take that now, wouldn't we?
Yeah, just in time for Expo.
That is not an insignificant point that you make, Mr. Rickett.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
All right, having a look at some of the top stories that we are covering this morning.
Tom, you've been looking at the political developments, not in the United States, in the United Arab Emirates.
Just only because, you know, we've been getting all sorts of information coming through, and I know a number of people are asking us to look in more detail at some of those developing stories. We are We're searching for more details on those stories that broke with regards to legal and law reforms over the course of the weekend. A story that's been picked up by loads of international news sources. I've just been reading an article on Sky News, an article on CNN as well, with regards to those legal reforms. Again, we are looking at more details. Once we get more details, once we get more confirmations, we'll be able to come back to you on those. But they continue as well. A lot of people suggesting that this is, well, these amendments, if you like, make life easier for expatriates here, or more attractive for expats, or try and retain expats here in the region. Well, they continued yesterday as well, as the UAE cabinet approved yet more amendments to laws governing public notaries and digital signatures. So obviously a virtual meeting chaired by the Vice President, Prime Minister and Ruler of Dubai, His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid. Changes approved to laws on, I quote, evidence in civil and commercial transactions. So whilst we've seen a massive focus on legal developments here in recent weeks, this one deals with notary publics, the term that refers to those authorised by the country's judicial authorities to attest and notarise legal documents. Again, something that has been a bit of a headache for a number of people here who have to have had things notarized, approved, etc., be it your birth certificate, be it your education documents or otherwise.
Oh, do you remember that back
you still
in
have
the
to
day?
Do it. You still have to do it.
Do you?
Yeah. I spent 2 days wandering around Wellington getting stuff signed and stamped to prove that I had indeed been educated at some point.
Yeah, you still have to do it to this day. And I think this is, so that, you know, the, using that and also using and approving digital signatures as a means. So I remember I had to fly back to the UK to get mine stamped. You know, you had to go back there to make sure that you got this right signature and things, because they wouldn't accept anything otherwise.
I mean, I remember using it as a good excuse for a weekend in London with, yes, with the chaffs. There may be parallels with you there, Tom.
There was that. There was an element of that.
You probably could have sent it by DHL.
But. Yeah, there was that. I've got to go back and get this one signed, notary public and all. But the other thing
I hand it in on the Thursday morning and I get it back on the Monday. It's the only way.
The absence of doing that during the COVID era, it's great that they brought in the digital signatures. But again, it's just yet. So the other thing is this digital signature. So these basically using that as a legal signature. Before it used to be, had to be signed and countersigned, etc. Now digital signatures will be accepted. It's all been sort of packaged as changes that will improve experience and enhance the digi transformation, if you like, of government services here, which for a long time have been a bone of contention for citizens and residents alike, but certainly for a number of expatriates here, having to get things signed. And with all good intention of moving to a digital future and the digital transformation we're going through, there was always the need to get back into your bank at some point to sign something or pick something up or drop something, some piece of paper off. This is, I think, a yet more evidence of that streamlining of the services to not make life easy, that's the wrong phrase to use, but certainly to enhance and make the make life more efficient here for expatriates and other groups as well.
Well, a quick question on that to both of you. What do you think? That is the noise of my Emirates ID card, which I got this morning. Had my blood test a month ago, whatever. Are we going to get to the stage soon where we don't have to have a bit of plastic that will make a noise when you hit it on a microphone? It will just be an app.
Then you look then. But what happens then when you drop your telephone in a swimming pool thinking that it's waterproof, but it's actually not because you cracked the glass casing on the back?
Yeah, there is that. Phone's repaired, by the way. 400 dirhams in Satwa.
Okay, good
well,
to know.
Well done to Pallavi's dad. Thanks, Kishore. Yeah, but I mean, you lose your wallet in a cut in the back of a taxi, don't you? And your Emirates ID's gone with it. So that can happen either way.
I agree. I mean, it's got to go. The physical's got to go, isn't it? I mean, the times of cards. You know, when I walked in this morning, somebody outside was asking for change for 200. And it was like the Marie Celeste out there. I haven't got any. What do you mean you haven't got any? I mean, people
cash?
Carrying cash with them now is almost an anomaly. Whereas, are you sure you haven't had an Emirates ID put into you as part of the vaccine program or something like that?
No, that's a 5G transmitter.
But yeah, no, I think it is. It is a move. Things will move that way for sure.
All right, having a look at other stories that are making headlines this morning. Not a story, but I just want to throw a quote out there. Best quote I've seen this morning, by the way. Keith Richards doing an interview with GQ magazine. Worth a mention. I think we're all on Keith Richards.
You're a brave woman doing Keith Richards quotes on the radio.
GQ just asked Keith Richards, does the band have any plans for the 60th anniversary, which is coming up in a few years? Keith Richards, well, the plans are still actually to all be alive. Fair play, Keith Richards, with you on that one. Right, Rich, what have you got?
Well, should we stay with quotes? I was going to talk about remittances, but because Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, giving a press conference overnight, and he's had a bit of a kicking in the Guardian newspaper, which is his political opponent, you'd expect that, for his use of metaphors in his vaccine conference. This is how Boris described it.
We've talked for a long time, or I have, about the distant bugle of the scientific cavalry coming over the brow of the hill. I can tell you that tonight, that toot of that bugle is louder. But it's still some way off. And neither mass testing nor progress on vaccines, so they're both vital arrows in our epidemiological quiver. At the present time, they are no substitute for the national restrictions.
The Guardian says it was a disgrace to be trivialising coronavirus in such a way. Brandy and I have given him a pass.
Yeah, that feels a little bit mean-spirited to me. That's how Boris speaks. He's a Floridy speaker, isn't he? I mean, fair enough. We get the point.
I think it's okay. What does the Kangaroo Court of Urquhart think? Did he go too far?
No, not at all. I'm all for it, you know. I mean, that is the way that the man goes about his business. He's been elected to that role. Everyone, safe in the knowledge of that's exactly how he goes about it. So, yeah, I've got no issues with it whatsoever.
You elected him. You knew what he was like. He's doing what it says on the tin. What's your problem?
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk transportation. Let's talk Hyperloop, because there is a mood of celebration among the team at Virgin Hyperloop. This is the organisation that's chaired by Sultan Ahmed Bin Sulayem here in Dubai. Dubai is a major investor in it. They've been developing a Hyperloop test route in the Nevada desert. And yesterday, for the first time, humans took a ride.
That was so good!
That was awesome. that was awesome.
What we're talking about today is that the first passenger test has now been done of the first new mode of transportation, mass transportation, that we've had in 100 years. And we're now talking about something that's incredibly fast, up to 600 miles an hour.
That was the voice of the CEO of Hyperloop. But before that, whooping in the background were two people. One of them was the Chief Technology Officer at Virgin Hyperloop, Josh Giegel, and he joins us now on the line from the United States. Morning, Josh.
Morning, Richard. How are you doing?
I'm brilliant, thank you. Really appreciate you staying up late or getting up early to talk to us this morning. Look, we'll get onto the technology and the implications of this. But first of all, just paint a picture of what it was like to be in that pod with your colleague.
Oh, it was an epic ride. I mean, I started the company about 6 years ago in the garage. And to go from the ups and downs, building the technology, building the team, before we even got down the tube, I was actually beyond excited. And when we got there, it was a smooth acceleration, smoother than I expected, despite looking at all this data over the past couple of years. It was quieter than I expected. It just was a little too short. All I wanted to go was a little bit longer and take more rides than just the one we took.
Fine, but no safety concerns at all. And that was obviously the primary consideration.
That was exactly. And my view is, if the product's not safe for me, it's not safe for anybody. And, you know, you build a team, you build a system that dealt with all the things that could go wrong in that system. And the biggest questions we've been asked as Hyperloop members is, how do you make it safe? And that was what we set out to show, is that this isn't a pipe dream anymore. This is the opportunity to show the world that two people can get on a Hyperloop and two people can get off a Hyperloop, and really just transform that way of thinking. And do it the right way and follow the safety process, independently verified, everything we would need to do for a full product.
Okay,
so what happens next? We know Dubai is a big investor in Virgin Hyperloop. There's talk of maybe a freight route in Dubai between the ports and airports being the first one. There's talk of maybe in India, close to us, Mumbai and Pune being the first corridor. There's talk of Saudi Arabia, Jeddah to Riyadh in little more than an hour. What can you tell us about what happens next?
I think we've been, again, having a huge amount of support from DP World. The chairman himself, Sultan, was out for the test, and it was the relationship we formed. He was it was as good seeing him coming out of the pod as it was anybody else I could have imagined. And in the region, we've actually been doing a lot of work in KSA, in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia as well, looking at different routes, different corridors there. And our goal is to really connect the region with this type of transportation, from Dubai to Abu Dhabi, over to Riyadh, to Jeddah, up to Neom and through Sharm el-Sheikh and into really the rest of the world, and really make it the hub of transportation through through this part of the world. And we think that we've made a lot of progress, particularly inside the kingdom. There's stay tuned for some stuff coming from there. Within Dubai, I think there's a number of opportunities as well, and we're really trying to make some strides with in Abu Dhabi from some partnerships with Mohammed bin Zayed University of Artificial Intelligence and others, to really establish that this is the 21st century technology for the 21st century problem.
Convince me, Josh, that it's not just a gimmick. Convince me that it is actually a viable transport solution on a reasonably mass scale.
So when we look at the needs of where we're at, we want to create a future that gets us to where we want to be, when we want to go. We want to move at the speed of an aircraft. We want to do it with no direct emissions, fully electric. Particularly in the Middle East, we could move 45 million passengers a year just powered from the sun on top of the tubes. And so I could use all of the other excess from oil and things like that to boost my GDP. But at the same time, I'm able to move about 20,000, 30,000 passengers an hour in a single direction tube. A single lane road can only move about 4,000 or 5,000 passengers. If I need more capacity, I would want something on demand, direct to destination, high speed, fully electric, and then can be powered by the sun in this region. And when you look at where we want to go, the shifts that we're seeing in solar, the shifts that we're seeing in transportation, like moving at the speed when I want to when I want to go and when I want to get there, that gives us the tremendous opportunity to do that.
What about the economics? They've got to stack up, haven't they?
Yes. And so you look at the size of our tube, because we're in a low-pressure environment, something like 50 kilometers of altitude, we can go the speed of an aircraft for about 10 times less energy. And that's one aspect. So really low operations costs, because we have magnetic levitation, no steel wheels grinding on steel rail. And then when you look at the infrastructure, we don't require a huge swath of land. We require smaller tunnels. So if you're tunneling or you're above ground, you're requiring a lot less cost to acquire the land. And when you actually look at the structure itself, it's more efficient, it's cheaper. You're not dealing with, you know, weather hazards, or in particular in the Middle East, it's trying to deal with the sand that blows across tracks and causes havoc. So when you combine all those things together, the speed, the cost efficiencies of this, you can actually get a system that's about two-thirds the cost of high-speed rail, but can actually deliver far superior service.
So what's a ticket going to cost, do you think? I know you guys have crunched the numbers. Between Dubai and Abu Dhabi, potentially, if we get that route, or between Jeddah and Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, what ballpark can you share with us for just an average punter in economy class buying a Hyperloop ticket?
So we think most routes around the world, if you look at the average kind of fare price for types of call it public transportation, this isn't for, you know, the super rich or the 1% or anything like that. This is really designed for everyday people. And that's about 10 to 15 cents a kilometer. So if you look at the Abu Dhabi to Dubai route, something like 12 minutes that we can complete that route. That's on the order of a little over 100 kilometers. That might be something on the order of maybe $10 to $15. You look at that Riyadh to Jeddah route, you know, you're on the order of probably about $50 to $100 type of U.S. So comparable, if not a bit less than flights, but something that's, again, available when you want to be.
Josh, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Busy time for you. If Sultan is still at your celebration party, do please pass on our regards. He's a long-standing friend of the Business Breakfast here in Dubai. Hopefully we'll see you out here soon. But for now, Josh Geagle is the Chief Technology Officer at Virgin Hyperloop One. And he's the guy who was on the test yesterday.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.